Welcome to the Gay Agenda. We have been absent for a while, been preparing and mulling over news stories. I am Roland Cavell. I hope you are well and you've enjoyed the start of the year so far. We'll go around the table. There's a few of us here to discuss some of the latest news stories from the start of 2018. So, sitting to my left,
I'm Andrew Deville. I live just up the road and I'm here representing the B in LGBT and the rest.
Hello, I'm Lydia. You may know me from such previous shows as Everything's Terrible on the Gay Agenda. I'm here representing both the L and the BAME.
And I'm Jen Yockney, and I just live around the corner as well. This is basically a panel invited by proximity. rather than talent or wisdom or anything. And I'm kind of here with a B hat and a little bit of a T hat, and we'll see.
You have got the blue hair hat on as well.
I have the blue hair, in case I am crowned to be our new ruler in the near future. Accoutrements, tiaras and things will need to coordinate.
Absolutely.
Blue hair stays, my loyal subjects.
Fantastic. Now, so the start of the year has been perhaps not as tumultuous as last year felt for news. As an overview, since the turn of the new year, how have we all felt about the queer community, any news stories that come through? Has it felt positive? Have you been avoiding all the news?
I think it's been a mixed bag. I think relative to last year, it doesn't feel quite so bad, but it's still there. You know, it's still happening every week.
When you say it, do you mean Trump?
Yeah. The fiery apocalypse.
Oh yeah, that thing. That old thing. It's been a weird 3 months. It kind of feels quite blah. Like you say, in comparison to this time last year, when we were so frickin' fired up.
Yeah, we've all just become dead inside, I think.
Yeah, definitely, dead inside. I think that's the way to go, because it's the only way you can't get hurt.
It's the calm in the middle of the storm. We've been hit by, the first round of Brexit and Trump and all those kinds of things. And now it's a little bit chill, and we're just slowly seeing a lot of things we care about ebb away rather than vanish in great big lumps overnight. But we know full well that this is just, we're in that little circular bit in the middle of the tornado, and
yes,
more of it's coming down the line.
That is exactly...
Just 12 months from Brexit and they're starting to do the, okay, so what does happen to my human rights when they're left to their own devices?
So what does Brexit mean?
Brexit means Brexit. Well, they've spent millions on it, and that's definitely...
That's what they've realised,
I like them to be a bit less esoteric and strange about it, and to give me some definitions. You know, look in a dictionary. What would it say under Brexit, apart from cluster beep?
Indeed.
So we'll look into the first of our news stories now. So, Lydia, you've got them in front of you there. So what's our first headline, please?
So our first headline is that LGBTI women are being left behind gay men in the gender pay gap. And I try not to speak on behalf of large groups, but this time I will, on behalf of all women. No, beep.
So it's a problem that we know about the world over.
Yes.
But it's not just the straight world that has it. It affects everyone.
Absolutely. It affects the queer community. I think that women out there, lesbians out there, it's something we've been aware of, because when you are in it, looking out, you can see these, there's a lot of there appears to be a lot of gay men sort of moving up the ladder. And when I talk about gay men, I mean, we're really talking about cis gay men that are kind of able to climb the ladder, whether that's because they have more opportunities, they invest better, it's also because they're more likely to speak up and be heard, whereas perhaps women might consider things a little bit more and then miss the boat. I mean, personally, as a purely from a personal perspective, I know that I often miss the boat because I think about things too much. Instead of just going for it, and there's that sort of fear that, well, you know, let's consider this.
Less thinking, more action, Lydia.
Yeah, I mean, basically, yes. So new research has found that there is a gender pay gap that exists within the LGBTI community. LBTI, that's lesbian, bisexual, trans and intersex women, earn an average wage which is 25% less than men.
And that's not a small amount. That is a huge chunk less.
That's for every pound that you earn. Potentially, I earn 75p.
On average, yeah.
On average, yeah. And that is hard to stomach and it's hard to hear. So on top of that, 60% of LBTI women earn less than $40,000 Australian dollars per year. So this story has come out of Australia, compared to just 42% of LGBTI men. That's weird that they've included the L when talking about men. But okay.
Yeah. Someone's got a shortcut on the keyboard to just do the acronym.
Yeah. To be fair, you need it these days, especially because the acronym gets longer and longer every day, it seems.
If I'm thinking of the acronym, just on a slight tangent, I was reading somewhere recently where there's a new acronym now, where they're getting rid of the LGBT and people are using, I can't remember what it is now, I'll have to have a look at it, but it's just like sexuality and gender sort of letters.
I've seen a couple of variations on it. GSM, Gender and Sexuality Minorities.
That's it, yeah.
Which, for me, as someone who does a lot of printing, that acronym means grams per square metre.
Yes.
So A4 paper is being horribly oppressed in the workplace.
That's really interesting.
How do we feel about that shift in acronym? I know we're going off at a tangent slightly, but I'm curious because I've seen a kick off about it because it's then eradicating the pockets that we put ourselves in.
Yeah, I mean,
and the identities they're in.
Should we be breaking down categories? But it just kind of feel like they're just saying those guys over there. I can't be bothered with all those names anymore. It's those guys.
I guess it's useful for the fear of have I included all the letters in this acronym that are currently kind of like the
too
correct
long.
Version of
too
saying.
Yeah.
To me, there are two problems. One of them, the times where I see people add extra letters to the acronym and they don't really mean it. Just, you know, if I think of all the organisations that in the 90s went from LG to LGBT, and if you went along to them after 5 years and said, so what have you done for the bisexuals in the 5 years? They say, we've put it on the letter.
You're in the acronym.
And also, I think at the moment we have kind of like a power structure within LGBT, whatever, of kind of G at the top of the pyramid, and then an L strand, and then kind of like B, T and Q just kind of jostling amongst each other at the foothill of the pyramid. I think if you change the label and stop using any of those words about all of those different kinds of people, it stops any of that changing. It kind of ossifies that thing. If we just go from LGBT as we are now to GSM, gay men are always going to get the biggest slice of the cake.
Because, as a bisexual,
it's my cake.
Because, and this is, you know, the G doesn't stand for gay in that new acronym. But that's what people think.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
The G is basically still in there.
Yeah, gay and something mumble.
I think what that story teaches us is that sexism is everyone's problem, and even people who are discriminated against are not immune from exhibiting discriminatory behaviour. And in fact, thinking of yourself in that way makes it worse. If you think I'm the victim, therefore I can't be a bully, then it all gets worse.
Oh, gosh. There's so much to unpack on that. Let me just... This is me miming opening a giant box of sexism.
For those without the ability to see us.
Yeah.
Our arms all over the place.
Basically, this box is in danger of taking over this entire room, which is quite a large room.
And it's quite a neat room so far, so let's not spill words everywhere.
I'm not going to get sexism all over the room, because that would be... I don't want to mess the room up.
Yeah, that's our stains.
Really does.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many people policing, you know, female bodies, and there are so many people policing female actions, and there's so many people saying yes, but not all men, and there are so many people saying oh, but what about me? And it's like, yes, there is stuff to unpack for men with toxic masculinity and all of that stuff.
But do it yourself, stop asking us to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Could we not have to take on all of your emotional labour because we've got enough? emotional labour right now. Just for ourselves.
As well, in that scenario, when people say, you know, not all men or similar such things, or all lives matter, for example, like you're missing the point of that particular protest or that particular statement. You're completely missing the point, and you're deflecting the energy of that movement and of that headline of action back to yourself again.
Basically,
that's what's needed.
Basically, like, everything's on fire, right? But there's actually a nuclear bomb going off. So could we deal with the nuclear bomb first? It used to be like there's loads of houses and one of them is on fire, but now
everything's on fire.
We're all on fire.
There is a nuclear bomb happening right here. So can we just deal with that?
Let's defuse that and get that
like, put a sarcophagus around it and everything. Oh yes, I know science. and then we will deal with the smaller fires. Because all we do is deal with the small fires all the time, and the small fires are the things that are easy to fix.
Yeah,
you know,
they tend to be symptomatic as well of the grander fires. They're almost spilling out from the other stuff.
Yeah. Also, just on this same topic, can we just all agree that A doesn't mean ally?
No,
it really doesn't
mean ally.
You don't get to be in the acronym.
No. You can't sit with us. Well, you can sit with us, but you can't. You're not in the acronym.
Like, being an ally, that's just being a good person.
A decent human being.
That's just being a decent human being, yes.
You're not going to suffer for it as much as the people in the acronym did.
Exactly, yeah. And if you are putting yourself in the acronym as an ally,
you're not an ally.
You're not, you are eradicating the asexuals.
Yeah.
So let's not do that.
No.
Before we move on, just one thing on the whole but what a banksery thing.
Mm, yeah.
Okay, we want to talk about the gender pay gap, we want to talk about its effect on lesbians or whatever, and the instant derailing. One of the fun stats that I saw, International Women's Day, of course, always gets the automatic Twitter fills itself with, well, why isn't there an International Men's Day? Followed by, there is. But someone did the Google, like, you can do a little thing that sees
trends.
How much people, Google Trends, that sees how much people search for things. On International Women's Day, International Men's Day gets Googled three times as often as it does on International Men's Day.
God, I saw that.
Which is kind of, okay, so 66% of this is whataboutery. We can assume you're just trying to change the subject.
Yeah. I saw a meme that referenced International Women's Day as International When's It International Men's Day.
I mean, International Women's Day is another huge thing to unpack just because of the whataboutery. And, like, all day on that day, I'm just, like, rolling my eyes. And people say, well, why do you need an International Women's Day? Not even, because that's another way to say, what about us? Yeah.
So, do you need that? Why do you need Pride? Why do you need International Women's Day? Why do you need all these things?
Because there's a nuclear bomb going off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's a perfect opportunity to draw attention to things like the gender pay gap,
for example. So this report, which was done by the St. George LGBTQI Financial Wellbeing Report, researched the financial needs of Australia's LGBTI communities. Funnily enough, in the States, it's GL, isn't it? Or it used to be. I remember I've seen it done as GLBT instead of LGBT.
I know there's a few people that I've met around Manchester who are a bit older who say it that way around.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether it's... just,
I wonder how it changed.
It was something that happened. It was kind of, it was quite a conscious thing over here in organisations in the 80s that became lesbian and gay.
Oh, of course.
Largely, I think, I was quite young then, so I was not around to witness it. This is the impression that I've picked up. It was organisations that had previously been gay that wanted to have women involved as well. And found if you put the G on the front, no women got involved. And if you put the L on the front to say, no, we are really trying to take this seriously as kind of like, you know, coded signal, then they got some. And so when you had things like London Lesbian and Gay Switchboard, the reason why it went from Gay Switchboard to LG Switchboard was a whole thing of, we really need some female volunteers on the line to help.
That's amazing. So 30 years ago, there was some...
a brief moment of feminism in the queer community.
Wow. Oh, so some gay men went, we need someone to...
we need someone to answer the phone so we can get out of the pub early.
We need someone to put some shelves up. Yeah. So,
get the lesbians
in. Let's get
some
lesbians in.
Yeah, they've got all the tools.
Yeah, they do have the tools.
It shows that the technicals of your messaging are really, really important. Like, in online sales, for instance, if you just include a countdown in your sales page with zero context for it being there, your sales will increase by 4%.
Really?
Like, you can communicate a lot just with a tiny little rearranging of something on a page. And the LGBT clearly was important for female engagement. I suppose I've never really thought about that acronym before and how important the order is.
And then, like, you know, 30 years later, we had the Lesbian and Gay Foundation changed to the LGBT Foundation.
Yeah.
For, I guess, the same reason, because they wanted, the trans people didn't feel that they were, trans people didn't engage because they didn't feel that they were being engaged.
Mm-hmm. For them, there was actually, with Foundation, it became LGBT. Lesbian Gay Foundation in 2000 from merger Lesbian Gay Switchboard Healthy Gay Manchester.
Oh.
So they only ever had LGs. I find it really peculiar, and it's one of those things I've never managed to nail them down on, because that was, for example, 4 years after London Lesbian and Gay Pride became LGBT Pride in 1997. Oh. And yet, in, you know, Manchester, this great gleaming bastion, if you believe the little flags the council give you every Pride, of championing LGBT rights for the last 30 years, where LG rights was more of the case. And it's taken that long. With Foundation, they were lesbian and gay on the door. On their mission statement, they were for lesbians, gays and bisexuals, but only ever talked about homophobia. And early on, there was a little kind of like TVTS switchboard helpline was based out of the same building for a while. And there was some big falling out there, and TVTS line left. And what was LG Foundation and was kind of a little bit B and a little bit T became very much more LG at that point. So there's some, you know, never publicly documented story in there. I feel if you're a helpline that's getting a room somewhere to run its helpline out of, then you don't leave without there being something
went down,
something afoot.
This report looked at household finances, overall wealth and financial outlook. Ross Miller, general manager for St. George, said the research was undertaken to help the bank understand more about the financially diverse needs of the LGBTQI families. It's funny to think about the fact that we have different needs because we're, you know, we all need to eat and
rent,
have homes.
Mortgage, eat.
Yeah.
Heating.
Glitter. It's the glitter.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it is. All them rainbows I have to buy.
Yeah. As an inclusive family bank, we are committed to helping all of our customers, including seniors, multicultural Australians and the LGBTQI community, Miller said. The report is an important step for us to identify and understand the financial needs of LGBTQI Australians. While there is definitely a gender pay gap in the LGBTI community, it's nowhere near as bad as the gap between straight people. So the report found that LGBTI women earn 18% less than LGBTI men, but heterosexual women earn 31% less than straight women.
Well, that's curious.
It's what it goes on to say is that this is down to just simply the number of women who don't, LGBT women who don't leave their profession and leave their careers to have children.
Yeah, of course.
So they stay in careers longer because they don't have,
and therefore more likely for pay rises and so on going forward.
And they don't have to go part time to look after the kids.
Dual income, no kids.
Yeah, dual income, no kids. Sorry, that's us, but we're by no means like
flush.
The reports suggest that LGBTQI women are feeling less of a pinch than heterosexual women when it comes to the gender pay and super gap. However, they are doing it tough in other respects, Miller said. Oh, that must be some sort of Australian slang. They're doing it tough. I'm terrible at the Australian accent. We're seeing some grave concerns.
I apologise for our Australian listeners.
Oh yeah, sorry. We're seeing some grave concerns impacting LGBTQI women, with 63% surveyed saying they are worried about their ability to financially provide for themselves and their family, and 33% saying money is a source of conflict in their household. I think that the other thing that you've got to remember about LGBTQI women compared to heterosexual women is where they reduce the gap by not going off and having children, like those silly heterosexual women, although a lot of them do. In fact, recently, so many of my friends are
doing children.
Doing children. That's a really bad way to say it.
Producing, creating
offspring.
Having
But on the other hand, the number of LGBTQI women who suffer with severe mental health problems and don't, because of their sexuality, and don't feel supported in the workplace, means that a lot of women are not always able to sustain jobs for long periods.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, again, oppression Olympics. It's a thing. Gender pay gap Olympics. Can't we just all, like, can't the government just go, do you know what? Everyone should just earn, like, enough to live.
Well, you know, this whole idea of the living wage. Everyone gets money from the government for a year.
A standard
amount. And then you work on top of it.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
We can't mechanise the workforce and leave people homeless. Like, we have to...
Do you mean like we already are?
Yeah, well, we have to stop it at some point, otherwise we all die. You know, it's... the logical conclusion of that is that nobody has a home, nobody has an income, and we can't go down that road.
And the thing is, 40, 50 years ago, they were saying, oh, you know, automation and mechanisation is going to revolutionise the world. You'll only have to work 3 days a week, but you'll still earn the same amount. And funnily enough, the people at the top went, nah, we'll just keep the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it hasn't transitioned yet.
It hasn't transitioned, it hasn't changed. Meanwhile, in Poole, it's been announced today, which is the 8th of April, that they are going to start fining homeless people on the streets. Yeah, yeah. £100.
How can you fine a homeless person? They probably have enough change in their hat they've collected to buy a burger at the takeaway that night. That's probably all they've got. How are you going to fine them £100? What, send the bailiffs around to take their sleeping bag?
Yeah, that sounds exactly what
that does happen.
Yeah.
Police and PCSOs going around just confiscating sleeping equipment so the person has to move on. There was a similar time when they were putting those spikes up outside Selfridges.
Oh, God.
They got campaigned away pretty quickly. But at that time, there were loads of reports of coppers going around in the night in parks just taking people's stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nikki and I were in town the other day, and she just pointed up at this building and said, look at all that wasted space. So, you know, the ground floor is a shop or offices.
Yeah.
And then there's two floors above with just nothing in it. And like
empty.
What you could do for people with those spaces if we were allowed to use them, you know.
Anyway, we've gone off on a tangent again. So let's move on to our next news story, shall we, Lydia?
News story, yes, is a beautiful story. It's a bit of a fluff piece, to be honest. But you know, it's by proxy a Beyonce story, so it's about Jay-Z. So Jay-Z is kind of awesome, and he's talked just this week about when his mum came out as gay, and he was so happy that she was able to be herself. Now, in the BAME community, being gay is often difficult. You know, I was very extremely incredibly lucky to have the support of all of my family when I came out, but there are so many black people and ethnic minority people who simply just can't come out. But Jay-Z's mum came out. It's been an open secret for quite a while, but she actually sat down 8 months ago with Jay-Z. And what is Jay-Z's actual name? It's really weird. It can't be Jay-Z.
Let's just say it's Robert.
Let's call him Marmaduke.
Marmaduke. Yeah. And his reaction was that he, quote, really cried. That's what he told David Letterman on the chat host's new Netflix show, My Next Guest Needs No Introduction.
But these tears were happy tears, right?
They were happy tears.
These were not tears of, oh my God, what the hell is this? These were like, so glad you can open up now.
So what he said was that for my mother to have to live as someone that she wasn't, hide and protect her kids for all this time, and for her to sit in front of me and tell me, I think I love someone, I really cried. Oh, says Jay-Z, real name, Sean Carter. There it is.
That's not handy, Marmaduke, not Robert.
Not Marmaduke or Robert, which is
Sean
a shame.
Marmaduke Carter.
Yeah.
Sean Marmaduke. So was it? Like, Sean like doesn't sound anything like a Jay. I thought it would be like Jason or...
Yeah, I don't know how he came up with that name.
I know, it should be Jay-Z if we're saying it properly.
Okay. That's a real story. I cried because I was so happy for her that she was free. This was the first time we'd had the conversation and the first time I heard her say she loved her partner. I didn't even believe in crying because you're happy. I don't even know what that is. What is that? Do you know something? That's just this tiny little bit of an inkling of reducing that toxic masculinity, where he was able to express that emotion with his mum and then talk about it. The conversation came while he was recording his last album for 44. It includes the track Smile, in which Jay-Z, husband of Beyonce. Love that. referenced his mum, Gloria Carter's sexuality. He said he wrote it the day after the two had the conversation. Jay-Z's comments to Letterman confirm his mum's own memory of the conversation. She told a podcast he actually started tearing because he was like, that had to be a horrible life, Ma. And I was like, my life was never horrible, it was just different. So that made him want to do a song about it. I mean, it's just, it's a little story, but it's important. It's important for the BAME community to have a star as big as Jay-Z confirm that being gay is okay.
That's valuable.
Yeah, it is valuable. He's got, you know, this huge platform. I don't know a lot about Jay-Z. I don't know what he said previously, because there's lots of rappers who have been extremely offensive about LGBT people. But I guess if you're married to Beyonce, then you're pretty much married to the gay community anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't hate speech the gays when you're married to Beyonce.
No, you really can't.
Queen B.
Just on that note, I'm just going to check myself, because I said the gay community and just been talking about this. So I'm going to say the queer community instead, because it's more inclusive, more all-encompassing.
And easier than all his letters.
And easier than all the letters.
Jen had a slightly downturned mouth at the mention of queer. Is that problematic to you?
Well, no, it's one of those things where there's kind of a generational thing. We're kind of maybe under, giving away my age a little, people under 45, much more cool and happy with that. I've been involved in like trying to rebrand organisations that were gay previously. And with sort of people who are kind of over 60, that's got so much strong stigma attached to it. And the other thing is, I wonder, you know, I mean, this is a genuine, I don't know, I don't go clubbing and pay enough attention to who's on the dance floor in response to it, but I wonder how much she is a gay thing as opposed to an LGBT thing, you know. But that could be going back to that thing that frustrates me about lumping together all the letters all the time, you know, when things are, it's LGBT because I've got to say the whole acronym, even though what I actually mean is two of the letters out of this. I wonder if it's, so, listeners, tweet into us now saying I am the following letter of the acronym and I heart, or I don't give a monkey's about
Beyonce. At Gay Agenda Radio if you're interested. Okay, that's a nice story. So let's move on to the next one then and see what else we've got in our grab bag of lesbian stories for our listeners.
I'm not hugely like, I like Beyonce's music, but I like Beyonce, like Lemonade for me was extremely important. So, but I still generalise, because I know so many people in my community who are just like obsessed with her, like literally obsessed.
Yeah.
Play
any of her tracks in a club down Canal Street, and you'll have a full dance floor.
Yeah, yeah. Apart from some tracks from Lemonade, because white people tend to go, Beyonce's black.
Okay, what?
Well, that's ruined it for listeners.
I know. Sorry.
Does everybody have like a pop king or queen that speaks to them in an LGBT way?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Who is it for you?
For me, it's Pink, because when I was coming up, she was like she was who I was listening to.
I have a few, but more recently I've been on this 3-month Sia bender.
Freaking love Sia. Oh my god.
Everything from 97 to now has been in the last 3 months. And I'm
tired. Yeah, Sia is like just is just incredible. The music's amazing, and she just really is
She has the mindset of a toddler, and she just really loves dogs. And,
and she doesn't want anyone to see her face.
Yeah, she's super traumatised, super shy, queer, and like virtuoso vocalist. But she's really like honest and it, like, oh my god, I'm about to want to see her on, aren't I?
I think you're already there.
If that was the warm up, the rant's going to be quite scary for this one.
No, I just think she's got a really relatable story for anybody in the community. The fact that she's open about being completely dead inside as well, when she writes her music, she feels nothing for it, even though it's extremely emotionally charged music. And in order to write a love song about a person with the right sort of emotional weight, she writes it about her dogs because she can't really feel that for people. So she writes really emotionally charged music about her pets. So it sounds right.
I love that. That makes me so happy that she, because you know, it's not really the dumb thing to admit that you are dead inside.
She's a songwriter and a business person, and she gets stick for that for presenting that in interviews constantly, because she doesn't try to be the sort of the mystical showbiz pop star. She's just like, no, I write songs and you buy them, just go away.
Yeah. Just stop looking at me. Yeah.
Anyway, let's carry on.
Yeah.
Before we get deviated off to some more Sia rantations.
You asked that question because you wanted to talk about Sia, didn't you?
It was just bubbling in my throat.
Okay, so a lesbian mother has had her parental rights restored in a Mississippi divorce case. So a lesbian mother in Mississippi, a mother who happens to be gay,
yeah,
maybe, has had the same parental rights to her son as her ex-wife, the state Supreme Court ruled on April the 5th. Chris Strickland had raised her sons 8 and 6 with her ex Kimberly Day, the boy's biological mother. Day had attempted to deny parental rights to Strickland in their divorce. A lower court ruling against Strickland had also given parental rights to the boy's anonymous sperm donor instead of Strickland. But in a much watched decision, the state Supreme Court reversed the lower court and sided with Strickland. Under Mississippi law, an anonymous sperm donor does not possess any parental right, Justice David Ishii wrote. For one, it would elevate the rights of a donor who is a complete stranger to the child and likely never will be identified over the rights of a person who has known and cared for the child. Justices wrote differing opinions to reach the outcome, but no justices used opposition to same-sex marriage against Strickland. I mean, she's really thrilled. But this is something that has gone on for years, and it you know, long predates legal marriage or even legal civil partnerships. I know someone who I won't name, who, you know, 30 years ago had a partner, and when they split up, she never saw her son again.
Blimey.
And he passed away at a fairly young age, you know, in his 30s. But she never saw him again because she didn't have any parental rights over that child. And there was no recourse for her to go and get those parental rights. So the fact that the court has stood up and said, no, if you are married...
If you've been the parent of that child for
parent,
6, 7 years...
Yeah, you are the parent. You are a parent and you get the same rights. I don't know if that will make, you know, anything change for people that are not legally bound together, you know, but
the thing that stands out,
it's at least a start.
Yeah, the thing that stands out for me the most as strange and peculiar, and how the hell did that, they come to that decision from that story, is the fact they gave rights to an anonymous sperm donor over her. Like, we're going to give rights to this child to anonymous. No one knows who they are.
Yeah.
Someone who literally signed an agreement saying, I don't want anything to do with the product of this donation.
Yeah. So in that respect, then, surely there are rights associated with every emission someone makes. So, you know, when you have a lovely time on your own. So
sorry, this is straight out of Legally Blonde. This is the this is the Elle Woods defense.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. So does that mean you have to be careful with every emission, every single time?
Yeah, so, you know, that's where that line of thinking took me.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they reversed the decision, but the fact that it was made in the first place to give an anonymous,
you know,
mystery
person. This is a country that polices vaginas as if they were guns.
Police vaginas, like they should police guns.
Yeah.
There's a t-shirt on my bed that's a war crime, apparently.
Hashtag things the listeners did not need to know.
I'm an oversharer, I get used to it.
Oh, fine. Yeah, you'll be settled again now, won't I? Lady looks flushed about the cheek.
The American government care so much about children right up until the point that they exit the vagina or womb. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they just stop giving a toss.
You want to go to school?
You want to
go to school and not be shot?
And not be shot?
What? No, get a gun, protect yourself.
Here, have a see-through plastic backpack. You know, that'll protect you. Is it made of lead? No.
Does it exert a force field around me?
No.
Is it magical?
Where's Iron Man when you need him? But so yeah, this idea that an actual sperm had more rights over that child than her ex-wife at one point. So it's great that they are. That they have made that change, and I think it's a positive outlook for the future, because you know when you're planning your gay marriage or marriage, as I like to refer to it as, you don't think about your gay divorce at the end of it because it's never something that you would want to, to think about.
You don't enter a marriage planning a divorce at the same time.
No. I mean, some people do, but...
Prenup.
We want prenup. That's the only part of that song I'm going to sing because it gets wildly offensive later on.
I don't even know what song that is. But
It's Gold Digger.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so that's why it's important for... legislators to write into law these types of events because when you go into marriage you go into it for life. I know I did. I married her 3 times
just to make sure it sticks.
Yes. But I saw a really funny meme on Facebook which was about how creepy marriage is. Marriage is really creepy. It's like, I love you so much, I'm going to get the government involved so you can never leave.
I believe it was during a stand-up Aziz Ansari summarised marriage by saying, like, I really like what we're doing. I want to do this till one of us dies.
Yeah. I love Aziz Ansari. Yeah. It's a very strange thing, marriage. And I campaigned for it. I wanted it. I love my marriage. But when you...
And your wife, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
She's just an unfortunate byproduct.
Yeah, she's a byproduct.
Legal requirement.
Yeah. I mean, I could have married myself, but...
would have been a whole can of worms.
Whole can of worms. But when you really look at what marriage means, I suppose as I'm getting older and learning more about the world and maybe growing up a little... This is a very special episode of The Gay Agenda.
It is maturing.
In front of
like
us.
Like cheese.
Oh, lovely.
And now I want cheese. And maybe wine. What time is it? Oh, it's getting close to wine time.
It's wine.
I can see why some LGBTQIA people...
Everybody.
We're not interested in supporting gay marriage or marriage equality. Oh, do you know what? It's so frustrating because the language that's been drilled
it's
into
invasive,
me.
Isn't
it's
it?
So invasive. Marriage equality. They didn't want marriage equality because it's too binary, which it is. The legal language of marriage is so non-inclusive. You know, it's just... I remember
one man and one woman.
Well, yeah, I used to sit at weddings, and I would when I was first with Nikki, we went to a few weddings, and I would sit and cry in the church or registry office at that point, because hearing them say one man and one woman was just devastating to me because I didn't think it was going to happen. So that's why it was important. It was marriage was important for me because it showed that my government was willing to treat me equally and stand up for me. But then it's like that thing, you know, first they came for. Like, they've not introduced that same kind of equality for people who want to live polygamously, for people who want to marry people who are non-binary. I mean,
people
non-binary
want to have a non-Abrahamic relationship.
Non-incestuous.
No, Abraham being like the root of Christian religion.
Yes,
and Islam,
non-incestuous.
Like, yeah, right, yeah, fine. Yeah.
But, you know, people that... So, there's a couple called Fox and Owl who had a non-binary wedding as a protest because, you know, I mean, Jen, I'd be really interested in hearing your perspective on this as someone who's non-binary. Like, when it comes down to... If you're not interested in marriage, then I suppose it doesn't really matter. But if you are non-binary and you just have to pick... You have to pick a... Am I... You know, is this equal marriage? Is this a gay marriage? Is this a heterosexual marriage? It's just... It's just crazy.
And it's specifically how we legislated it, and even how we legislated it, I think, in England and Wales, because there are subtle differences in the way the law went through in Scotland. Though I think Scotland is still the same way. Again, tweet us in and correct us, listeners. Because for England and Wales, what we did was not to just like strike out the bits that said one man and one woman and go, two people, or, you know, two consenting adults, or whatever appropriate phrase for that would exactly be. We did, okay, we're going to have a parallel set of the entire same set of law that says two men or two women. And that seems to me, I am not a civil servant, legislative-y type person, but that seems to me like a lot more work
it
than just
like
cross out
work.
One man and woman, or even just put in a clause at the start that says, for the rest of these bits of legislation, anything that says one man and one woman shall be taken to mean any two people over the age of 16 who are willing. And
consenting adults.
Yeah. Why that was originally supposed to be the term that was used, but there was such a campaign against the what was perceived to be the ambiguous nature of the legislation, saying that the Queen could have sex with the child and have a lesbian dragon baby or whatever. You know,
we just like to make queer. Whether we're saying that the Queen is secretly a dragon, or whether that the lesbian she would be having sex with to produce a half-human, half-dragon baby. It's an exercise for the listener, and we have no opinions.
Certainly. There was a lot of pressure to make it very specific, to apply only to the people who wanted it. The men wanted to marry men, and the women wanted to marry women. Any other terminology wasn't acceptable because it was perceived that people would abuse it, or that it would cause a rot in society.
And it's about, I think, how far... One of the things with getting legislative change is that thing of you need 326 MPs who understand what the hell you're saying.
Yeah.
And the point where we were at with the same-sex marriage bill in 2012, 2013, I mean, there were a chunk of amendments in it that were mostly from Julian Huppert, who was then Member of Parliament for Cambridge, that, shall we say, transed up the bill a lot, queered up the bill a lot, and would have dealt with a lot of the problems that we're talking about here. But it was... I was one of those sad geeky people who sat there and watched the entire debate and live tweeted all the way through it with lots of popcorn and Pepsi Cola going, it's so exciting, for all of the readings. That did get talked about, but there wasn't the momentum to carry it. But when we got to those sorts of amendments that needed a certain amount of support to actually get nailed into the bill, there were about 10 people still in the room. And there are about three of them who actually understood what they were talking about. Yeah. The others were just there going, oh, my bit's up in 10 minutes, I better take a seat.
And you need a quorum, because I learnt this by watching Mary Black, which I want to talk about later on, about the ridiculousness of private members' bills. 10 people is not enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why those bits of the bills didn't go through.
Yeah, you walk out, you make sure that there are few enough people that technically this has been debated, and we've given you some time, but... And we were at that point, I have to be honest, I don't think that even if you'd got 650 MPs nailed to their seats in the chamber at that point, which would be a very close fit because there's only about 500 chairs, so you know, I'd get to choose who sat on each other's laps, I hope. But you wouldn't have been able to get them to understand quite what you were saying, say that this is a thing we need to do. I think there's been an enormous step forward. We are not there by a long way, but there's been an enormous step forward actually in the last kind of 3-4 years in understanding of trans and gender diversity. Mm. That would probably mean now you could get 50 MPs to sit in that chamber and have that debate instead of three. Mm-hmm. But we still need, it's one of those difficult things about people having to endure the misery of being visible in a world and culture that doesn't want them to go around being visible, in order to get to the point where enough of the people who can change those things will understand what the hell is going on. And it's why, even though you may hate your MP, it's why talking to your MP about these things, it puts a human face on it. It stops it just being, these people want to be able to go into toilets so they can molest women.
Yeah, those guys.
And children, don't forget children.
Who would then have an absolute license because any laws about sexual assaults would no longer apply to them somehow, even though that's never been part of anything that was proposed. And it's only by making that human instead of the scare stories that we're going to get to where we need to be to get those changes. It's enormously... And also related to that, you have the thing, as you were just saying, Andy, about that they were only prepared to take quite a narrow sense of what marriage could be in the bill. At the same time, the mixed gender civil partnerships, which was part of the same proposal when initially unveiled, that got thrown away in a, no, you're not
hissy
having
fit.
That.
Hissy fit, I think the word hissy fit.
Yeah, it was
hissy.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah, so, you know, we're at this situation now where if you are trans but don't want a gender recognition certificate, if you are non-binary, if you are intersex and want that the state to actually respect you as not being the first two genders that they thought of, then you've got to compromise if you want to get married. And it's one of the things kind of slowing down me between the yay engagement that I had a while ago and the... Yeah, let's see what they do with reform of gender recognition bill. And maybe we can have something a little bit better as a consequence of that. We're not, you know, we've been together for 12 years. We're not in a hurry. We don't need to get married now. But it's deeply frustrating, but it's also kind of a thing where I think when I was first starting to come out, it was at the height of Section 28 and all those things. And the idea that we are where we are is so impossible to the 16-year-old version of me that there's also a kind of... And I think if we weren't Brexiting, to have a political bias on the programme, if we weren't Brexiting, I would believe that it would come good sooner. Because almost everything that we've got because Europe told us no.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, yeah, and that is a very sad state of affairs, that the Brexit is going to put the brakes on so much
progress.
I mean, we're literally going to go back. Like America has, we're gonna start regression, but it's funny, like I had probably never heard the term non-binary until maybe 4 years ago, which is crazy because I know exactly what it means, it makes so much sense to me. But when that bill was going through, like, non-binary was a thing, but it wasn't even...
It was too far down the path. The success with that bill was, for all we've sat here and used the term gay marriage a little bit, which I avoid like the plague for obvious reasons, was myself and a couple of other people lobbied the government when the bill was starting to be written to get it to be written as the same-sex marriage bill and not the gay marriage bill, and they listened to bisexual voices and went with that, and the language used from the government publication end of it was all very good and inclusive, and the civil servants tasked with it had understood what the hell they needed to do.
Yeah.
And it was interesting seeing the effect of that on the debate, because one of it's the second reading in the House of Lords, there's, I can't remember where he's sort of, you know, in the way that they are, Lord Tumpty Tum of Tumpty Tum and Tumpty Tum. I can't remember what his name is. His real name is James Graham, and he's a member of the House of Lords, and I can't remember his fancy title. But he was one of the reactionaries who do not want any of this sort of thing. But he did this wonderful thing of trying to pronounce the full LGBT acronym and describing it as people who are lesbian, gay and gender transmutant people. Now, being of the age to remember Battle of the Planets, being a kid's TV at that point, despite someone being transphobic and biphobic and homophobic at me, I punched the air and screamed, "Transmute!" And it made me very, very happy because, you know, we'd kind of got a radical but saving the earth from aliens secret trans cabal referenced in Parliament, and thought that was going to happen that day.
In things you didn't expect to hear,
That's probably quite high up there.
Yeah. There's still about 100 people who have liked the Gender Transmutant People Facebook page that I set up within 3 minutes of him saying the words.
That's amazing.
Well, we'll stay with the sort of the political theme that we've sort of gone on to for the next news story, shall we?
So the next news story is probably my favourite news story of the first quarter of this year, because I was a huge fan of Sex and the City. And Cynthia Nixon, my favourite unqualified lesbian, is running for mayor of New York City.
Now, we were talking about this a bit before we came on air.
Not mayor. Governor
of New York. She was mayor a few years ago. Now it's governor.
Governor of New York. So she's going against the incumbent governor, Andrew Cuomo. And basically, the former speaker of New York City Council, Christine Quinn, branded her an unqualified lesbian. Well, to be fair, you've got an unqualified tangerine face moron as the president. So having an unqualified lesbian as governor of New York, I don't think is too much of a stretch.
Relatively superb.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider the fact that the US had Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. But he was pretty good at, like, it's so strange.
And he would have been unqualified bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Would he not? And so
I think he'd probably pass some bodybuilding exams on the side somewhere along the line. Whereas Cynthia just hasn't taken the exams to be a lesbian.
I mean, the thing is, I understand this because I too am an unqualified lesbian.
Haven't passed all your tests.
I haven't passed all my tests. I'm one cat away.
Is it like your driving test where you have a theory and then a practical?
Yes.
And then a cat.
You see, I passed the theory. The theory was, you know,
you've nailed that.
17 to 21 before I, where it was all theoretical. And then, you know, I've done my real life experience. I've done my apprenticeship.
Yeah.
With the dating and now, you know, I've got my final paperwork was obviously the marriage certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I started off as a polytechnic, you know, civil partnership, but it then converted to a real university with marriage equality. But I'm one cat away from getting my PhD. That's the proper hard dyke
certificate.
Is
it kind of like the trophy that's actually a Doc Martens?
Yeah. Spray painted gold.
Oh, fabulosity.
Yes.
So do we think Cynthia Nixon will do well?
I think that Cynthia Nixon could do well, because New York City is so liberal, and they, you know, and it is the Manhattan in particular is a very queer place.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are a lot of really stupid people
in the world
who will, you know, people that are against this are the sort of people who have never voted before, but they say, well, I'm going to vote this time because I don't want that.
Strong opinions, no action. People who are like, chow. But...
So, strong opinions, no action. I'm trying to work out if it was a...
I wasn't trying to make an acronym. I'm just describing it.
Nah.
I'm going to shut up for the next 20 minutes and just sit here fiddling with those letters on some Scrabble tiles until something comes out.
Yeah. So, I mean, she'll have, I suppose, being a woman against her, and being a lesbian against her. You think,
and also being a mother against her, you know, because remember, they only care about you as a mother while you're pregnant, while you're an incubator, then they couldn't give a toss. But what goes along with this unqualified lesbian thing, is much bigger than just Cynthia Nixon, because I can't remember who said it. I suspect that Jen probably has an encyclopedic knowledge of all news because you've been very good so far.
Not on America. America is just a big
deal. Okay. So Emma Gonzalez, who is just amazing and like gives me so much hope for the future of America, has been bashed as being a lesbian, which she isn't. She isn't a lesbian. I think she may identify as...
She positively identifies as bisexual.
As bisexual. Ah! See, the fact that I didn't know that is stupid. No. So she's bisexual. But people... And so, I can't remember who it was, just throws lesbian out as an insult. And so this unqualified lesbian, it's not the unqualified bit Unqualified is kind of just tacked on. It's the lesbian bit. These people don't want a lesbian as the governor. They don't want an out lesbian as the governor, because that means that things are changing. And what about family values? And won't somebody please think of the children?
The woman who said unqualified lesbian is a lesbian herself. The woman who called her own, because she was saying you've had a qualified lesbian, now you want an unqualified lesbian.
Whereas Cynthia Nixon has never, I think, called herself a lesbian. Being attracted to men and women, and that she doesn't use the word bisexual about herself because she doesn't like the negative stereotypes and connotations that it carries. So yeah, I saw unqualified lesbian and I thought, yeah, but nearly qualified, semi-certified bisexual.
So what? When does it say in the news report when the actual sort of the voting and all that takes place, or is this just in the early days still?
So well, the we're coming up to, I think it's the midterms. I can't. I'm looking through this article now.
I'm fairly sure that it's for this November's elections. Which mean, as this is just at the primary stage of deciding who the candidate would be, you've got to move reasonably
really
fast just to actually have a campaign.
Yep.
Mm. So they'll have several people going forward for each party, and then it'll be at the end of that one from each, and then they'll go forward and the final vote will happen.
It's basically like
the
Voice.
Yeah, it's a tournament.
It's like the Voice.
But less interesting.
A tournament. I'm jousting. It was a tournament.
So she's created unqualified lesbian badges.
As have a million people on Etsy.
As have a million people on Etsy. Second only to the nasty women badges, I think. The unqualified lesbian buttons are available in two colours, blue and white, for donors who give more $5 or more to the Cynthia Nixon for New York campaign. Cynthia was called an unqualified lesbian. In her defence, there is a lot of paperwork required. There is. You can't just go around calling yourself a lesbian. I mean, you can't.
And you know, if you are, you know, a qualified lesbian, and you know you're found for malpractice, you'll be struck off.
You have to go back.
You have to be straight then, start all over again.
Yeah,
all your cats get given to the cat protection.
Yeah. I mean that's, and you never get to have sex with a woman again. I mean that's the more important thing for me.
That's a big thing you're missing out on.
Like
there.
I love my cats, but orgasms are great.
and as far as I know, you can't get one from a cat.
Not legally.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole, please.
No, let's not involve
this,
rabbits.
This show has standards.
Well, we try to have standards anyway.
So she actually addressed this at a rally in New York City. At the Stonewall Inn. Yes, campaign rally held at the Stonewall Inn. Opening the event, she said, "Welcome unqualified lesbians and qualified ones too. Welcome to the trans community. Welcome to queer people of every stripe and our beautiful straight allies." She didn't call any of the queer community beautiful, but okay. but again, I'm really shocked that I didn't know that. We kind of co-opted her into being gay, and she's not actually gay. Oh, I'm sorry. I feel like I just have to keep apologising, and I do a lot. You know, sometimes you really have to check your own privilege. Like,
and that says the language you're using as well, because in the news reports it may not specify, but because it's stating her in that as unqualified lesbian, you're saying, okay, well, they must know what they're talking about.
They must know what they're talking about.
Despite the rest of the story telling you, they don't know what
they're
talking about.
You know, I always try to check myself before I wreck myself, but I appear to have wrecked myself.
I think this is a deeply owl story because of the way that it's using lesbian as a charged political insult. Yeah. And, you know, queer on queer action of a lesbian using it as a slur on someone else who's queer. Come on.
Oh, that's some self-hatred right there, you know. It's like if a lesbian is using lesbian as a derogatory term, then what must they feel about themselves?
Well, there you go. Internalised misogyny and homophobia is our biggest problem. We're most unkind to ourselves as a result of homophobia. It's not about being bullied or other people, it's how we feel about ourselves and how unvalidated our existence feels.
So just like last week, it was the 30th anniversary, for want of a better word, of Section 28 being coming into law, and it made me. I read this article. I'm sorry, I'm going as I often do, as I want to do, going off topic. I read this article about Section 28 and how we should celebrate the fact that it's no longer here, and it made me so upset that I couldn't stop crying, and so angry that I couldn't stop crying, because the fact that it was ever in place means that we shouldn't be celebrating the fact that it's gone. We should be angry at the fact that it ever was. And I only mention this, there is a link, because it's a link to internal homophobia, because I spent my teenage years talking about how gross being gay was.
Yeah.
You know, it's disgusting. Watching Queer as Folk, secretly going, oh my God, this is amazing. And then at school going, oh God, did you see that disgusting show?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so 20 years later, that still eats me up inside that mm-hmm. I was...
Yeah.
So when I realised that I still unwittingly am biphobic, like, I'm like, this is like so much bigger than just me saying the wrong things. It's like 30 years
of no information, misinformation.
Yes.
To be fair, it's more than 30 years, because Section 28 didn't magically drop out
no,
of the sky.
No, it didn't. You know,
that's an entire life of living in a culture that's deeply saturated in transphobia, biphobia, and homophobia, and all those kinds of things. And that as some of that starts to wash away, you get to look at some of the stuff that's... I've started with washing away, so now I'm going with, like, archaeology, and we're getting down and we're seeing some of the bones of what we're standing on, going, I thought it was perfectly okay land. Because, yeah, I mean, I look back at things like watching Blackadder from the 80s and 90s and things that were hysterical then that I now look at and go, ooh.
That's hurtful, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just, actually, at the time...
Yeah.
It was, you know, probably progressive humour for its age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's always a difficult thing I find with people who kind of like judge. So why... this thing happened in 1920-tum and it was awful. Someone I remember saying to me, when same-sex marriage was going through, the Liberals were so supportive of same-sex marriage, why didn't they implement it in 1906 when they had a majority? Well, the world really didn't understand it. They didn't actually have the words to have that debate for even one of them.
Yeah.
And a chunk of it is that we need to be kind to ourselves and say, actually, we're moving on and understanding the world and evolving more, rather than just beating ourselves up for the fact that there are things I didn't know yesterday that I know today.
I think that the reason we beat ourselves up so much with such big sticks is because it's also recent. You know, this isn't like 200 years ago. This is like...
In our lifetime.
In our, like, 20 years ago, gay panic all over the television. Me laughing at every joke that was ever in Friends about Chandler's father. You know, all of these things that you go, oh, that was terrible, that was dreadful. But you're right, you know, we do need to be kinder to ourselves, and we do need to forgive ourselves for things that we did not know and things that we did not understand.
And things that were the best thing we had then. Because actually, that, you know, you would get those kind of the homophobic jokes on Friends, or the token bisexual character on Coupling, who was so many examples of bisexual cliche and stereotype. But I sit there, I love the show, I absolutely love it as writing. I think it's a really beautifully done humour. It's problematic as hell, but it's beautifully done. But at the time that happened, you're going, they've got a bisexual!
Yeah, yeah.
She's awful, but they've got a bisexual!
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have to be grateful for the little bits that come our way when they do. Make the most of them, I suppose, don't we?
We do.
Right, so we'll call it an end there for our first show of our spring season. So, L, ticked off. Ticked off the list.
Boxed off.
Yeah, so do tweet us, boxed off.
Wow.
It's good of you to tick your lesbian box.
Yeah.
So yeah, do tweet
I encourage
at Gay Agenda Radio if you want to comment on anything we've discussed, or give us any new stories coming up through the year that you think we should talk about in our summer season, which we'll be recording around August time. So thank you to Jen, Andy and Lydia, and we shall see you next time.
Bye, lads.
Bye.